Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, editor of Applied Clinical Trials, and welcome to another episode of the ACT Podcast. For today's edition, I am joined by Stephen Pike, Chief Clinical Data and Digital Officer of PARXL. Prior to his current role, Stephen was Senior Vice President and Development Head, Digital Data and Analytics at GSK, where he led efforts to develop a tech-enabled modernization and innovative program enhancing the use of clinical data. Stephen also serves as Chairperson of the Steering Committee of the Clinical Research Data Sharing Alliance and is also Chair of the Association of Clinical Research Organizations AI and ML Committee. Thank you for joining me today, Stephen.
My pleasure.
All right, Stephen, where is the clinical trials industry currently standing when it comes to the integration of AI?
It's one of a small number of questions which I get asked a lot. And that won't surprise you, I'm sure. AI seems to be the acronym on everyone's lips right now. Maybe I'll sort of begin by sort of standing back a little bit from clinical trials and talk more broadly about AI and clinical development and how it fits into the whole drug development process. Artificial intelligence is not new. Let's begin there, because I think, you know, it's easy to think that AI came into existence when ChatGPT emerged right at the back end of 2022. And of course, that's far from true. In fact, AI probably has existed since the 1950s. Alan Turing, a name many people will be familiar with, was one of the early proponents and advocates for artificial intelligence, very influential figure. And since the 1950s, we've seen steadily accelerating progress with AI-based technologies. So we saw machine learning, we saw deep learning. Most recently, we've seen large language models and then their sort of image and video and speech-based equivalents. So the technology has been around for 75 years, albeit its capabilities expanding and advancing most recently, very rapidly indeed. And I guess that's helpful to remember as a context, because the next thing I wanted to mention, I think, is, so what do the regulators think about all this? And of course, given that history, they have had time to think about it. This is not new to them. And indeed, they published a paper 2023, which spoke about the submissions they'd been receiving for drugs which have been supported in some way, touched in some way by AI. And, you know, it's really striking. I read the paper and was astonished to read that in just one year, in 2021, 132 submissions to CDER and CBER, so that's just the US agency, had included some aspect of AI in the submission, which is already a pretty big number. And then you remind yourself that this is before large language models emerge. So one has to assume that number is going to accelerate further in the next few years. Even so, although the regulators have had time to think about it, and they have held workshops, they've held advisory committees, they've been engaging with clinical trial and other drug development participants, there's not much by way of formal guidance as yet. We've heard them speak, we've heard about some of the areas that they're concerned about. And I suppose all of this sort of leads up to say, in that context, although we've seen AI start to make inroads into drug development and to some extent into clinical trials and clinical development, I think there's a long way to go. And I think it may happen a little bit more slowly than you would expect because of the lack of formal regulatory guidance and the natural concern of the sponsors of new drugs. Obviously, they don't want to take risks with their assets, but neither do they want to take risks with patients. And of course, you know, the patients are the most important stakeholder in this whole process. You know, AI is a new technology in its current format. It's building on strong foundations, but there's a lot that's still new and unknown. And we want to make sure that we use it wisely, carefully, responsibly, ethically, and so on. So a long preamble to your question, but I guess to sort of say, well, you know, where are we seeing it used? It's certainly being used a lot in discovery, understanding human biology. It's been used a lot in chemistry, helping choose the right molecules. It's being used in the clinical setting for diagnostics. And we've been hearing, I'm sure you've heard, you know, about instances of using AI to interrogate x-rays, CT scans, images of all sorts, and do so very successfully, very rapidly, very reliably. We're all experiencing AI in a limited way in wearables, and we see wearables almost ubiquitously now in clinical trials, I would say. And I suppose the other big area where we've seen AI make strong inroads already is in safety and pharmacovigilance, where you're using the ability of AI to read natural English language, and indeed other languages, of course, but natural language, make sense of what it's reading, and then use that to identify important new safety signals. So all of that is already happening. We're going to see all of that continue to advance. And we're also going to see a sort of risk-based encroachment into clinical trials. But I think, I've said already, I think that approach is going to be more careful, more thoughtful, perhaps slower than you might expect. I would call out a few key areas where we're going to start to see real evidence of particularly large language models, the sort of next-gen AI making real inroads. One is around, and this probably sounds a bit kind of dull in a sense, but it's important, and that's workflow automations, operational productivity. The important stuff that that gives us, the important benefits that give us, I think are it allows us to move through the whole process of designing, planning, designing, conducting, and completing a clinical study more rapidly. So we're going to see a speed up in clinical trials, and that will become increasingly noticeable to all participants, I think, over the next couple of years. We're also going to see a lot of clinical trial participants using AI to support decision making. So AI, which is based on the sort of ingestion and synthesis of large volumes of evidence. One only has to look at the number of medical journals, the amount of literature that's out there around new drugs coming through. It's almost impossible for humans to stay on top of that. AI does that incredibly fast, incredibly well, and allows us to make really well-informed decisions as we're planning our programs, as we're designing our studies. And then the other big area is search and retrieve. And this idea that we can access knowledge and information quickly, again, allows us to ensure that the people involved in clinical trial conduct have access to the information they need when they need it, make high quality decisions, right time first, every time. So, I suppose what I've just called out, and this is sort of getting to the end of my rather long answer, I think what I've called out is AI really enabling more clinical trials, better clinical trials, more drugs being delivered, being approved more rapidly, supported additionally by the already existing investments in the sort of upstream end of drug discovery, meaning more drugs coming through the pipeline because AI has done a better job of finding opportunities. So in that sort of context, I think AI, you could really characterize it as driving speed, driving quality for right time first more often, driving productivity, both in terms of the number of drugs coming through the pipeline and the speed again of those studies when they reach us. And in aggregate, I think could be quite transformational. But when you ask, I guess, the final piece of this, which is, so what will it mean to the patients? I think that's another story entirely. Well, I think we'll come on to that in a moment.
Could you describe the importance of collaboration, specifically through data sharing, with regards to advancing the development of technology solutions?
Absolutely, and you're absolutely right. If the technology is as powerful as we all hear it is, and indeed it's proving to be, the fuel for that technology is ultimately data. Now, the sort of ChatGPT and the other generative AI models which are now out there, of course, what were they trained on? They were trained on a huge and very diverse set of data, material on the internet of all sorts of different characteristics and flavors. And what they've been trained to do incredibly well is converse with humans. So they know how to make sense of a question. They know how to answer a question in a way that can be understood by humans. What they're not particularly expert in, at least not in the sort of incarnation in which we're most often able to engage with them as sort of citizens or patients, what they're not particularly expert in is my disease or the characteristics of patients like me and the needs of patients like me and the sorts of treatments that might be most effective given the kind of symptomology that I'm experiencing. So typically what we're going to want to do in terms of many of the applications that might be relevant is expose them to new specialized rich data sources, which will allow them to be further trained. And this is something we call fine-tuning, which takes us directly to your question. Well, because many people may say, well, why do we need more data? They've all been trained already. They're already very smart. What else is there to learn? It's that sense of they've been exposed to sort of broad and somewhat shallow ocean of data. What they now need is a more narrow, specific, and very deep and rich ocean that's relevant to the particular application, the particular problems that we want to address on any given occasion. Well, then the next question is, well, where is that data and who's got it and how do we access it? A lot of it sits with public bodies, governments, healthcare providers, institutions, in some cases, insurance companies, but it's sort of spread across a number of owners, if that's the right word. In some cases, access is permitted, and there are mechanisms for allowing that. In other cases, it's more problematic, more difficult. And sometimes that data just doesn't exist at all. But the one thing that does strike me, to your point, is, you know, we're entering a world, if we weren't already in it, where I think we have to see data as part of the common good. You know, I think none of us owns enough data, no matter how big an organization we may be, to really do justice to the opportunity that AI presents. And so I think there's a real I think there's a real onus on those who manage, take care of, and are in a position to make accessible patient data, and it's that principally that we're talking about here, to think about how best to enhance access for the greater good of patients across the globe who need access to, who need the treatments that are going to flow from the kind of approaches that AI can enable and that would be very difficult without it. So I think that's the sort of straight answer to your question. I would use this opportunity to highlight a couple of areas where collaboration are also important, though. One is, I think, around, well, the opportunity that is presenting to really create a strong framework for AI done well, for responsible AI, for ethical AI. No one organization can do that alone. I think there needs to be a sort of collaboration among all the participants in clinical development to agree on what those principles are. And we're starting to see some of those outputs. Medical institutions, medical societies are beginning to put together their statements. ACRO, which is the Association of Clinical Research Organizations, which the company I work for belongs to, they've created a statement of principles. Our own company, in turn, Parexel, has created its statement of principles. But I think that this is a space where sharing our perspectives, collaborating on what good looks like is incredibly important, incredibly powerful potentially, and will do much, I think, to alleviate the concerns in the public discourse, which is around this all-powerful, all-knowing, all-seeing, a little bit scary technology. So I think this is a really critical area where we're already seeing very nice evidence of collaboration. And I did just, I don't think you can leave this area without also talking about the patients themselves and the importance of seeing them as collaborators. You know, their voice needs to be heard and it needs to be a part of the debate around what is the role of AI in clinical development? How best do we ensure that patients are beneficiaries as well as the other participants in this whole process? So yeah, I mean, I think collaboration would be absolutely sort of central in the way I'm thinking about AI. For data, but for other aspects as well.
How much of a game changer are AI solutions to patients participating in clinical research? What are some of the largest benefits they'll see?
We've sort of touched on some of this already, but I think if I sort of start perhaps by digging into some of the things that patients may already be being exposed to, imaging, for instance. We know that when you're a consultant physician and you look at an image of some sort, an X-ray, a CT scan, whatever it may be, you know, you will look at that, you will use it to guide your diagnosis. And then very often, you may need a second opinion. You may get a colleague to look at it, but it's very much one of those sort of processes which is leans heavily on expertise And the number of consultants that are available is often limited. Access to them may not be easy, depending on what part of the world you live in. Here's a space where I think AI can really drive access and improvement in the way that we think about and use imaging to guide diagnosis. It's much more rapid. It's now, I think, in a state where it's very reliable, very high quality, typically, and used in a wide variety of disease settings. So I think the patients will see the benefits of that, certainly indirectly, if not necessarily appreciating that AI is what's helping them get to a diagnosis more rapidly and more reliably. I talked also a little bit about devices and wearables and this notion that, and something we see a lot in clinical trials, that we will invite patients to wear a smartwatch or to have an app on their phone or whatever it may be. And typically, I think until now, those have been fairly simple in the sense that they will capture just a few points of data. But of course, the device itself is almost unlimited in the amount of data it can capture. And we're starting to see that next generation of AI-based solutions where we can continuously monitor patients, that we can have the AI continuously monitoring the data flow, this sort of very high density, high volume data flow. And it can start to do things which are rather more sophisticated than we've yet seen. So again, I think that's an area where patients are going to start to get benefits. Again, it may not be obvious to them that what's going on under the hood of the watch that they're wearing necessarily, but it will be an area where I think we will see real, really new, interesting insights into disease, into the experience of being treated, into the experience of the symptoms associated with the disease that patients have, and then helping guide us to better treatments, better solutions. And then I suppose the other two areas are around areas I've already mentioned as well, which are it's just going to speed up drug development. It's going to improve productivity. We're going to see more new medicines. What I think is going to be a bit more slow in coming is, for example, the idea that a physician will sit down in their clinical office with the patient, run a bit of AI, and use it to guide a decision in a clinical trial. I think we may see some of that in healthcare in a limited and carefully managed way. I think in the clinical trial arena, that's going to be a little bit more slow coming, not least because, as yet we await regulatory guidance on how that can be done in a way which is accepted by the regulators. And you'll know as well as I do that, when you're spending a lot of money developing a new drug, the last thing you want to do is jeopardize that by trialing some sort of new unknown technology in order to complete the some part of the process of testing the drug. So I think that will come, that patients will have sort of a more more visibility of this more directly as part of the dialogue they have with their physician. But I suspect at least in clinical trials, that's going to be a little way off before that really begins to happen.
All right, great. So now, on to the last question, just, with all this AI and all this technology, and I think this is especially true in, research drug development, how important is it that a level of human intervention remains when it comes to the oversight of all this different technology?
I mean, it begins with the observation, which I think we'll all have heard again as part of the sort of public discourse here, which is AI at this time makes mistakes. Sometimes it makes mistakes. There's this sort of notion of hallucinations, which I think many people will have heard about, even if they're not entirely sure what it means, whereby the AI can produce as fact something which is entirely made up. And it's to do with the way the technology works. But I think the key point here is this is a technology which is not 100% reliable. And therefore, the important role of experts remains as necessary today as it's always been. AI is therefore, I think, best seen as enabling good decision making, as providing information and evidence, which ultimately will be judged by physicians, other experts. and the human will make the decision. So we talk about human in the loop, not just as a kind of catchphrase, which sounds good, but actually as an absolutely integral, necessary part of the way that we think about AI. I think there are other sectors where we're hearing about amazing things being done autonomously by AI. AI is making decisions. That's not the space we're in. That's not the way we're going to operate. And I think there is unanimous agreement across not just life sciences, but also healthcare more generally, that we don't want to be operating in that way. That's not the role for AI. Better, I think we all agree on this, to see human decision makers supported by really powerful AI technologies, speeding up processes, helping us get to better decisions more rapidly and more often. And then, we will see where we get to. Maybe the world will look a little different in 5 years' time. This technology is moving very fast. But I think here and today, I wouldn't want an AI to make a decision about my disease, my treatment. I still want and believe it's essential that we have a critical role in decision making for physicians and for other experts. So yeah, I mean, it's great that you raise this human oversight. Absolutely critical that we recognize its important role.
Stephen, this was a great conversation, and it sounds like there is a lot of promise for AI in the clinical trials space. Thanks again for your time.
My pleasure. Happy to be able to help today.